WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Novelist, literary critic, and former NPR book critic Doris Grumbach is celebrating her 80th birthday this weekend, and she has a new memoir called The Presence of Absence, about discovering private prayer after abandoning formal prayer in church. Grumbach has written eloquently about aging. An earlier memoir was about the year she turned 70, a year, she says, that began with feelings of despair, but led to a change that started a new and fulfilling chapter of her life. When she turned 75, she experimented with solitude. She wrote about that in her memoir, 50 Days of Solitude. On this archive edition, we have excerpts of the interviews we recorded after each of those two memoirs. Let's start with our 1991 interview after the publication of her memoir about turning 70. At the age of 54, you were married, but you decided to leave your family, your job, and your city of the time, which was Albany, New York. What changed in you that made that change so essential?
I had the feeling that I wanted to be a writer. And until that time, except for journalism, reviewing, I had been a teacher. Most of my children were gone. There was no one.
Grown?
Yes, you know, gone off to college and then marriage and that sort of thing. And I think my husband, who is and was a wonderful man, found it very hard to be married to me with my needs for the needs that someone has who is a writer. And at one point in my life, I wanted to go and live and teach in another city, and we fell out about this. And so I had this curious feeling that I needed to do something else, or else I would never get a chance to do it. So I left. Of course, I never left my children. They had left us to go on to school. But I left and went to do what I thought I had to do. I'm certainly glad I did it. I don't think it was such a courageous thing to do as some people seem to think. I had enough money to support myself, and I just went.
What are some of the ways you wanted your life to change?
Well, I guess, to be honest, I wanted not to be married. I wanted to be, for the first time in my life, my own person. I wanted to make all the decisions that had to be made, not because of what the children needed or what my husband needed or what his career needed, but selfishly what I needed. I think that was the major thing. I went off to Saratoga to be on the sort of think tank committee of a newly formed college there called Empire State College. And I lived in a room in an old house, which I fitted up as a kitchen, dining room, bedroom, sitting room, and all in one, everything but the bathroom, which was off in another part of the house. And for the first time in all those years of marriage, 31 years, and before that of being in a family, I felt I was my own person. I had nothing and I had everything. And it was from that on, that time on, that everything happened to me. I went to Washington on the invitation of the editor of the New Republic to serve as a literary editor, a purely serendipitous move. I had very few qualifications, and to this day, I don't know why he asked me. I think it was an act of a leap of faith that I find incredible. But it was then that you know, the life I have now started, you know, the publication of chamber music and the critical life I've had has all started after I was, I was pretty old by then, I guess, 50, in my late 50s.
You are of the generation where it was just expected that a woman would get married and have children and, you know, be the mother within a nuclear family. Do you ever think that if it wasn't expected of you, perhaps you would have chosen a different life?
No, I don't think so. I think I want to be very clear about this. I had a very good marriage. I didn't stay there for 31 years because it was bad. It was not. And I had a good time raising my children. Oh, I thought many times, you know, if I didn't have them, I'd be able to write. But that was usually a passing thought. I always thought, when they are raised, then I'm going to do something else. But while I was doing it, I was happy. I don't regret for one minute having married, and I think probably I would do it again, if only for the experience of a good marriage and the pleasures of motherhood, which I would not forego for anything. I think you have to think of it in terms of periods in your life. It was true in my mother's time, and certainly in the beginning of my time, that there was one period. It just was one long period. You did the same thing for 75 years or 80 years or however long you were lucky enough to live. Now, with the women's movement and with new ways of looking at life as a series of stages, I think it's possible to have many things in it, to be many things, to experience many changes, even sexual ones. And I feel enormously lucky that I've been able to do that.
You mentioned sexual changes. One of the changes you made in your life is you began a relationship with another woman. And I'm wondering if friends of yours were really shocked by that.
I don't know. The people who stayed friends with me appeared not to be shocked, and those that I never saw again, I don't know what they thought. It never concerned me, really.
Yeah.
I think of sex as a private matter, which sort of like defecation. It's something that choice you make. It didn't materially affect my acquaintances or my friends or my children. Of course, I'm sure it affected my husband, and that I regret, because to this day we are friends, and I'm very fond of him, really. I think he married a wonderful woman after, and much better wife than I had ever been, and so he has a good life now, and I have a good life, and I think it was time probably for both of us.
As you get older, are you finding your taste in literature changing at all? And I'm wondering if you are turning to more literature about people who are in their 70s or written by authors when they were in their 70s.
Not at all. My literature, my taste in literature has changed, but it hasn't changed in that direction. It's gone back to my old taste, which is for writers that I liked when I was younger. Dickens, for example. I've been rereading Dickens delightedly, enormous pleasure. I'm not as interested in new young writers anymore, although I've taught a lot of them, and when I see their work, I'm glad to see it. But I find that I'm impatient with a lot of contemporary literature. I go back to the moderns a lot, to Fitzgerald and Virginia Woolf and D.H. Lawrence. Foreign writers like Thomas Mann and Camus and Kafka and Proust, they were the contemporaries of my youth, and I get much more pleasure out of rereading them than reading many of the efforts of the contemporaries. There are contemporary writers whom I greatly respect, don't misunderstand, but for the long term, I think, when you do get older, it is those writers who left their thumbprint on your psyche, so to speak, that you read with greatest pleasure.
Doris Grumbach recorded in 1991 after the publication of her memoir about her 70th year. We'll hear a later interview about solitude during her 75th year after a break. This is Fresh Air. Writer and literary critic Doris Grumbach is celebrating her 80th birthday this weekend. In 1994, I spoke to her about a memoir she wrote about her 75th year, the year she experimented with solitude. She spent 50 days alone in her home in Maine while her companion Sybil was away on business. Grumbach used this time to retreat from the world, seeing no friends and staying away from the telephone. You write that at first it was very exhilarating to not hear any other voices because there was no one else around. So you were compelled to listen more intently to your own inner voice. What was that experience like?
Well, you do listen. It's a curious kind of thing. You're not conscious of your inner self surrounded by people. You're not conscious of it if the radio is playing all the time or the television is on. Or even, I think, if music is on all the time, much as I would like that to be so. What you are conscious of is this self, this inner core of being, and you listen to that, and it's sometimes frightening. Sometimes there's nothing there, and you think, there is nothing there, I'm the missing person. But other times, you hear things which you might not have heard in this isolation and this solitude.
Now, you write in your book about your 50 days of solitude that you found yourself thinking a lot about getting older, thinking a lot about death. Did you think about it more than usual?
Yes, that was something I noticed, that the silence is almost a precursor, I think, to the ultimate silence, and you do think more about the long loneliness, as Dorothy Day calls it, the long loneliness of the final silence. When you're alone, there's no distraction from those thoughts, and so you tend to dwell on them, to wonder whether it will be like this, except without consciousness. I think it's true that as you get older, you tend to speak less, you tend to listen more, you tend to think about the end more constantly.
You know, I think often when people grow older, one of the things they want to do is make every moment count as much as they can. And did you ever feel that, well, by sentencing yourself to 50 days of solitude, you were both gaining something, but you were losing something too. You were losing 50 days of contact with other people, 50 days of contact with your partner, for instance. Mm. Right?
Did I lose anything? I don't think so. In living as long as I have stocked up on so much to think about, so much to remember, so many people I've known, so many books I've read, so much music I've heard, that if I heard nothing more and saw no one else, I would still feel that I was occupied. But I gained a lot. And what I gained was a very good approach to the novel I was writing. I discovered that the characters in this book sat at my breakfast table, that they were in the house with me, that their situation seemed realer to me, closer to the core of the matter than they did when I thought about them at odd moments when there were other people around. So the big gain was creative. And I have come to believe that the more you can depart from the world, the better, perhaps, is the fiction that you contemplate.
Do you know the feeling of both wanting time to pass slowly and pass quickly? Let me explain what I mean. I go through my typical week, and I go, as so many of us do, boy, thank God it's nearly Friday, and then I'll have a weekend. Then I say to myself, what the heck am I doing? Why, when I want life to go slowly in a way so I could live a long time and feel that, that life is long and spacious. Why do I have this temptation to rush through every week just so I could get to the weekend? It makes you feel like you're doing the opposite of what you want to be doing. You're rushing your life instead of appreciating it moment by moment. So when you were alone, did you feel like, well, that day went quickly, that's good? Or did you feel, well, the day went slowly, that's nice, I have more time?
Well, Terry, I think it has a lot to do with the difference in our ages. Mm-hmm. You're relatively young, and there is that double action working in younger lives. You want to enjoy every moment that you can, so things go slowly, and on the other hand, you want it to happen fast. When you get older, or at least, let me say, when I got older, I tended to not want things to go quickly. So that fit very well with these days of solitude. The longer the day stretched out, the more I got to think about, the more I looked at, the more I listened to and read, the better it seemed. And at the end of this time, when I went back to Washington and then to the South for a vacation, I thought that things were moving far too fast.
Was there ever a time during your period of solitude when you said, oh, God, I have 3 more weeks left. I don't want to wait that long.
No. In fact, as I got close to the end, I wanted it to go on. And I realized how seductive this can be, that the benefits of it far outweigh the difficulties, and that for the rest of my life, whatever there is left of it, I will probably want it more and more.
Now, does that make you feel very secure? One of the things a lot of people fear is being alone, especially being alone when they get older. People who have spouses or companions, you know, worry terribly about losing them for a lot of reasons. One is because of how much they love them, but also there's this just fear of being on your own. Is that a fear you don't have now?
I don't have it. I would hate to lose my companion. But I know now that I can sustain myself. I want to add just 2 small things which make the condition of this experiment different from most people's time alone. One is that I saw the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have great, great pity for people who must face the rest of their lives alone. That was not my situation. And the second thing was that I live in a place of extraordinary beauty. From every window in my house, I see the sea. And that winter was an exceptionally beautiful time when the snow covered everything across the reach and over to Deer Isle, and I had this one enormous lawn stretching miles of white. I don't think if you lived in solitary confinement and looked at a brick wall for the rest of your life, or lived in jail, or lived in a very unpleasant place that you were forced to live in, that it would be the same. I was sustained in this by the beauty of the place that God granted me to have.
Do you think that you would have enjoyed this experiment when you were a lot younger?
I've wondered about that. I think when you're young, there are so many things working against it. You're so ambitious. You want to succeed. You want people to love you. You want the world to accept you. You work all the time at a kind of acceptance. When you get older, those things don't matter that much anymore. You know that you're not going to be loved by many people, and you will be loved by a few. You know that your career, as far as the active world is concerned, is over, and you're not going to be anything much more than you are right now. So solitude then becomes a kind of companion and not a violation of your ambitions as it was when you were young and people didn't call you or people didn't hire you or people didn't love you.
Doris Grumbach, recorded in 1994 after the publication of a memoir about solitude during her 75th year. Her new memoir is called The Presence of Absence, On Prayers and an Epiphany. She celebrates her 80th birthday this weekend. We wish her a happy and healthy year.